Canada's lagging productivity has become one of the hottest topics in economics, again. Everyone from the Bank of Canada to leading economists from across the country are discussing what's at the root of Canada's productivity challenges. Productivity sounds easy, doing more with less, but there's a lot more to it. And that's what makes it so vexing as a topic for policymakers. We know that we need to increase our productivity, particularly if we're falling behind our trading partners. But the levers economists think will make a difference in our journey don't seem to be as easy to pull or as effective as hoped. To help us sort through the discussion, I'm joined this episode by the Conference Board of Canada's Director of Economic Research, Tony Bonin, and the founder and executive director of the Centre for the Study of Living Standards, Andrew Sharp. We discuss how we should understand productivity and why it's important for it to improve. Near the end of the episode, my colleague Tony talks about new research the Conference Board is conducting, linking skills to our productivity challenges. We'll hear that Tony thinks this is a promising new avenue, in part because there are many levers that the government can use to support skills development and address our productivity challenges. I'm Michael Bassett, and you're listening to Economics Matters, a Conference Board of Canada podcast. Tony and Andrew, welcome to Economics Matters.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be here.
Good to be here.
Let's start at the beginning with a definitional question. GDP divided by worker hours. Is that the most meaningful way to understand productivity? Are there any other measures or metrics that you think are critical to this discussion?
Productivity is that core economic concept, and it's one of the classic conundrums in the discipline in that it's a very straightforward idea in theory, but very hard to pin down empirically in the real world. I would say, yes, GDP per hour worked is my preferred measure, but the core of the concept is really productivity measures our shared prosperity, controlling for the amount of efforts we're putting into that work. Output per year normalized by some inputs is the way you want to think about it. And in that sense, GDP per hour worked is a good, and in my view, I think the best one that we have as a widely available metric that's out there. The other big one that's out there, and Andrew can certainly speak more to this, is total factor productivity or multi-factor productivity. The downside of the GDP per hour worked, in my view, is that you're missing the capital component. If you think of a knowledge worker with a computer and access to the internet, they're going to be more productive than a researcher who needs to go down to the library and troll through books on a shelf. If you take into account the capital of the person's computer, that also is an input into their production. But total factor productivity is probably even harder to pin down in the real world, because here it's not a directly observable thing. And typically what's done is you measure this total factor or multi-factor productivity through a regression on the solo growth equation, which captures capital and labor as the inputs. And the residual of that, the growth not explained by capital and labor inputs, that's your measure of productivity in that approach. But it's a bit more convoluted in that way. And I think GDP per hour work is easier to track and understand. So that's one of the reasons I prefer it, even though it has some downsides.
I agree overall with GDP per hour work is the best measure. But I will make a caveat. The key measure that's used in Canada, the United States, is business sector output per hour work. And that obviously excludes the non-business sector. So it's about 80% of the economy. And the reason is we have a lot of measurement problems in the non-business sector. So therefore, the official estimate of productivity in Canada, the United States, is business sector output per hour. But it's highly correlated with total GDP per hour.
The challenge of the non-business sector is, what is the GDP generated by a teacher at a school? It's not an obvious, straightforward thing because schools aren't generating revenue like a business is. That numerator that you have in GDP per hour worked have a clear, easy thing to track, even though it is tracked. I mean, we have some GDP associated with that, but it's closely tied to the wages people are earning in that sector.
Why are we talking about productivity again? What's happening to Canada's productivity these days?
Productivity is the main driver of our increased real wages over time. In the immediate post-war period, Canada enjoyed a business sector output per hour growth around 4%, up to around 73. Then we had a slowdown after 73 to around 2% a year, and then another slowdown after 2000 to around 1% a year. At 4% a year, you're going to double your living standards in about 18 years, whereas at 1% a year, it takes you 70 years to double your living standard. So we've seen much slower growth in living standards in recent years compared to the 20th century.
Andrew's certainly right. This has been a long-term problem, a good 50 years where Canada's productivity has been lagging. And the big risk we have now or challenge we face now is that our lagging productivity is lagging by an ever greater amount versus our peer countries, particularly the United States. Right before the pandemic, so 2018, we started to see a bit of decline in productivity again, as Andrew was saying. We saw a spike in labor productivity during the pandemic because GDP came down as things were shut down for health concern reasons, but hours dropped by an even larger share. You see that ratio increase. After the pandemic, you get into 2021, 2022, GDP starting to rise, business activity coming back, people are going back to work, and we're getting back to the level of productivity that we saw pre-pandemic. But that downward trend in productivity has just kept on continuing. And over the past year or almost year and a half now, we've actually been seeing negative productivity growth. That's the big concern. Now, for the latest data we have, the end of 2023, the last quarter, we're basically back to where we were at the start of 2017 in terms of GDP per hour worked.
Well, I agree. I think it's been this negative productivity we've seen in the last few quarters. That certainly gets people's attention. Now, I don't think that we're actually going to stay there for a long period of time. I think underlying productivity, labor productivity growth is probably in the 0.8% per year. We're probably going to get back to that. But what happened was we had this massive productivity gain in 2020 because of the pandemic. It was actually all due to compositional changes. The people that were laid off were the people that were poorly paid, that basically couldn't go to work or couldn't work remotely in restaurants, hotels, and therefore that resulted in a compositional upward boost in productivity. And we've seen that unwind in the last couple of years as these people have come back. And at the same time, we had a strong economy in terms of a rebound from the pandemic in 2021 and 2022. And then we've seen much slower growth in 2023. And slow growth generally is associated with slow productivity growth as well. So if the economy could get to a strong growth trend in the future, I'm sure we'll see a rebound in productivity to its probably 0.8 to 1% per year trend. So in that sense, I'm fairly optimistic. We're never going to get back to the 4% we enjoyed in the immediate post-war period. We'd be really, really lucky to get back to 2% even with AI. It would be hopeful, but I doubt it very much. There's just too many other factors at play that seem to be depressing productivity growth.
Tony, you started off talking about how we compare to the United States. And oftentimes in the productivity discussions, it is that comparison against others. Are international comparisons really meaningful when it comes to productivity?
Well, yes, I think they are. We always want to compare ourselves with our competitors. So I completely think they're meaningful. Now, there's a lot of measurement problems in terms of comparing productivity across countries, particularly in comparing productivity levels. It's much easier to compare productivity growth rates because there you can use the testing currency. Whereas in a level comparison, you have to have a common currency and you need to use some type of purchasing power parity or exchange rates that reflect purchasing power parity. So it's much trickier, but definitely we should be looking at how other countries do compared to us.
When we're talking about international comparisons, that's when you want to look at typically relative comparisons, like the growth rate and productivity in Canada versus peer countries. That helps control for those level differences, the purchase power parity issue Andrew was raising, or different market structures. So if you look at overall growth rates, but then of course you're not looking at the level of productivity. So there's challenges both ways, but international comparisons are very important because ultimately we want to know how quickly our prosperity is growing, which is going to be closely tied to our productivity, of course, but also relative to our peers and our competitors in the global market.
So we've talked a little bit around this, but the context that Andrew provided around productivity being an issue really since the post-war era speaks to an issue that's been around for decades. But part of the reason we're talking about this today is that it is such an important topic, it seems, for economists. And particularly, an announcement in March 2024, Bank of Canada Senior Deputy Governor said Canada's productivity challenge is an emergency. Why do you think right now we're seeing this renewed focus on addressing Canada's productivity challenges? Because the trends that you've been talking about have been around for a couple of years. So is there something that's really specific to today that is making it a really important topic or bringing all of this attention back?
I mean, I would commend the Bank of Canada and the Deputy Governor for raising the alarm. It's not typical for a central bank to say something so boldly and bluntly in terms of broad economic trends like this. It was out of the ordinary, and I think it's really raised the alarm bells for a lot of people to look at what is a bit of a convoluted economic concept and topic, but an important one nevertheless. A big part of the current concern is the recent trends in productivity. I mentioned before, we've seen negative productivity growth in the past 6 quarters or so, and our level of productivity in terms of GDP per hour work back to where it was 5-6 years ago. That's a big concern. The other piece of it is a lot of the forecasts that are out there, including the conference board's forecasts, are showing that this is not expected to improve in any sort of meaningful way in the coming years. The one caveat I would say to all of that is this is not a challenge for Canada alone. The declining productivity in Canada is shared among our G7 partners. There was a very interesting article in the Financial Times a few weeks back about what they called the upper income productivity trap, where now that we've unlocked so many of the low-hanging fruit in terms of growth and prosperity, open barriers to trade, flexible capital markets, highly educated workforces, things like this, now it's a matter of fine-tuning policies. It's not a challenge Canada's facing on its own, but the data we have and the outlooks we have, we are struggling more than our peer countries for sure.
Andrew, what about from your side? Why do you think we're seeing this come up now?
In terms of the bleeding recent trends and the impact of the pandemic, I just wanted to give a concrete example. We recently did a study for Transport Canada on what's happened to productivity in the transport sector. Transportation used to be above average in terms of productivity performance. Since 2017 or 2019, it's been the worst two-digit mates industry. It's been horrible, 4% per year negative. And why is that? Well, basically the pandemic, because two industries there were greatly affected by the pandemic. The first is urban transit. People were doing remote work much more, yet you had all these transit systems still going. So there was much fewer passengers, yet the same number of workers. And in fact, total factor productivity was even worse because we've been investing a lot in urban transit. So total factor productivity in urban transit has just been a disaster. The second is the air industry. Again, shut down the airports. And yeah, the number of workers didn't fall as much. Labor productivity in the transport sector was like minus 10% between 2017 and 2022. Now, luckily, it's going to improve this year because of the rebound in that area. But the pandemic really had a major effect on the productivity of the country, of the economy.
If I can build on this point about the compositional change over the past 5-6 years, I mean, it's been huge. The impact of the pandemic massively changed our industrial structure in the midst of the pandemic. Lots of typically lower paid workers out of work for a while, service sector jobs that tend to have lower productivity levels, GDP per hour worked. So higher labor intensive industries were shut down. There was this big shift happening all over. The thing you can see very clearly in the data, for example, is when the first set of lockdowns happened in the spring of 2020, average wages in Canada spiked by 10 or 11% because of this big shift where the working wage earning people who were getting less were now out of the labor market. There's a big shift in average wages of those who generally white collar workers who stayed employed during those early months. That then evened out as people came back to work and you had the regular real wage growth in the coming years. And the same thing was happening with productivity. The other piece that was very surprising during the pandemic was the rate of business bankruptcies slowed during 2020 and 2021. That had a lot to do with the government supports that were put out to get people and businesses through that very unique and dire circumstance. Now, through 2023, we've started to see business bankruptcies and closures increase and be higher than they were in the pandemic. So I think there's a little bit of this Schumpeterian creative destruction going on where a lot of firms were kept afloat, where we had very low interest rates, we had very generous fiscal policies supporting us through that period, and now we're adjusting. So I think there is some hope that as we still adjust a little bit out of the pandemic period, that we'll return to maybe a more stable or decent level of productivity growth. The last thing I will say about changing compositional structures is there was also a big change over the past 20 years from a more manufacturing basis towards the service sector. So that's had a big effect, as well as shifts away from large oil production in the 2010s. As that declined coming into the pandemic 2018, you see the size of the oil and gas sector in Canada decline relative to others. And that's a very high productive sector. Lots of GDP for the hours of work that are being put in there. These compositional shifts, it certainly doesn't explain everything, but that is definitely part of the story. And as all of those even out, yeah, we should have a return to some decent normalcy, but still a lot of work to do.
One of the challenges in this realm of productivity is it can feel really ephemeral. It's a high concept, but the effort is really to try to bring it down. The senior deputy governor did that a little bit. She outlined three factors in our productivity performance. The three that the senior deputy governor outlined were capital intensity. And so the example provided there was snow plows over snow shovels. The second was labor composition. This is my interpretation of what that means. So how well your workers know how to use that snow plow, or as anyone who's ever asked their kids to help out with shoveling, there's a learning curve on using even the most basic tools. So how skilled are the workers in that way in terms of labor composition? And then the third is multi-factor productivity, which is probably the most difficult to wrap your head around. My understanding is that that would be how efficiently capital and labor are used together. In this snow plows, snow shoveling example, are the plows and workers ready to roll when enough snow falls? And do they know what streets or laneways are assigned to what workers so that there's an efficiency there? Given those three factors and trying to draw that out through that snow shoveling example, are there any of these that are more important to the productivity story than others? Or on the other side of that, are any of these more likely to be changed in a meaningful way to actually spark productivity improvements?
So this is very standard drivers of productivity from an economist's point of view. Statistics Canada actually has official estimates on the contribution of labor composition, capital intensity, and multi-factor to labor productivity growth. So we actually have estimates over different periods, the relative importance of these factors. Labor composition adds about 0.3 percentage points per year to overall labor productivity growth. And that's quite a bit when labor productivity growth is 1%. It's less when labor productivity growth is 2%. Capital intensity has also been adding to productivity growth as well. The key problem has been multi-factor productivity, which has literally been negative in Canada since 2000. So the point is, though, what is multi-factor productivity? Well, it's basically a residual, a measure of our ignorance, some economists call it. In principle, it's supposed to represent fundamental underlying technological change, but also captures economies of scale, measurement problems, and many other issues like organizational change. Although we're able to distinguish between the contribution of capital intensity and MFP, it's pretty arbitrary because when you have new capital, often those new capital goods embody new technological change. Yet we make an arbitrary distinction between technological change and capital intensity. So from my perspective, it's just the starting off point for any analysis of productivity. You have to go beyond those. It's certainly important to look at the aspect because that's crucial. But measuring multi-factor productivity means is really, really difficult.
Andrew raises a really good point, which is it's very difficult to tease out the component parts. The main conceptual component parts are captured well, and I love your snowplow analogy and drawing that out and expanding it. When it comes to multi-factor productivity, I love that Andrew calls it a measure of our ignorance as economists, because that's really what it is, this residual leftover from this analysis and regression. I think it's a good way of thinking of it. But it does capture things like, I would say, competition, or in Canada, perhaps the lack thereof in certain product markets. So you can think of there being big monopolies or oligopolies in certain sectors, or generally concentrated sectors, or lack of competition between regions of the country. Because we're a big country, but we're quite spread out in terms of where people are and where the dominant market player. Competition is a big thing that could use a lot of improvement in Canada, and that would in turn help bring down prices a little bit, maybe, but also spur more productive investments in the firms that are competing in more competitive markets. Hard to measure, hard to actually get at, and very specific to the product market that you're talking about. A lot of variance there, but it lends itself to the policy development and frameworks around ensuring there's a fair competitive market and trying not to allow too much concentration in any one place. On the capital intensity side, one thing that's raised a lot is the lack of capital investment in Canada. Indeed, we lag the US in terms of the amount of capital investment. That's something that could be improved, but very difficult to think of the policy levers that would do that exactly, other than saying, hey, please come invest in our country. I mean, there's a lot of investment attraction services out there. I think that's good, letting people know where there's a market for foreign dollars to come and invest in emerging technology and companies and so on in Canada. We definitely need more of that. Investors need good, high-quality data they can get access to for that. And in terms of the labor composition, I think this is a big one around skills and skill development and training. There's been a lot of focus on that in past years, certainly prior to the pandemic and then through it. It's one of the focus of our research projects at the conference board right now. I would say of the three, it's the one that's maybe the most understudied in terms of its impact in relationship to productivity. So we're trying to get a better handle on that piece right now. But a lot of policy levers in terms of training and education options, but difficult to know how to invest in that training and do it well to support the productivity outcomes you want to see.
You both have pointed to part of the implications of calling this an emergency. It's moving beyond just saying this is a problem and then identifying all the problems inherent in understanding the problem and the lack of progress that we've seen over years into actually starting to think about what's new or how can we actually make a difference in changing our productivity performance. So moving into a solutions framework. That's where I think we should end. I'd love to get your perspective on where we can bring some new ideas or where we can actually make some changes that will lead to improvements in our productivity performance.
We have some preliminary results of research on the relationship between skill shortages or tight labor markets and the lack of available skills for the economy and how that might relate to the shortfall in productivity. We're focusing a fair bit on the productivity gap between Canada and the US. Our preliminary estimates right now are suggesting that between 7 and 8% of the productivity gap between Canada and the US could be attributable to skill gap challenges in Canada. And that's not just in the recent period, it's any period the gap in productivity growth in Canada and the US widen. About 7 to 8% of that we can attribute to skill gap and skill shortage issues. That translates into about $3 billion to maybe $5 billion a year in lost GDP in the knowledge-based sectors, and maybe something like $2 billion a year in the construction sector. All of that, again, I want to caveat as preliminary estimates. We'll have our research paper out in the next couple of months. If we can identify the magnitudes and benefits there, it is something we have a lot of policy levers that we can start to act on and make some improvements in.
I think the responsibility for business sector productivity lies with business. You know, business has an incentive to improve its productivity, and that's a way to get higher profit. So it's not as if it's government can tell business to improve their productivity. Now, in terms of the overall policy framework, obviously the policy framework affects businesses, but our policy framework in Canada is market-oriented overall. And in fact, we've been looking at productivity for many, many years in Canada, and we put in many pro-productivity policies. Even the GST was supposedly to improve productivity. So we've been looking at this issue a long, long time. I'm skeptical that there's a lot of easy solutions there. There's certainly no silver bullet. And I would say government policy would probably be unlikely to boost productivity by more than a couple tens of percentage points a year at the best. That doesn't mean we should do it, but basically it's up to business to do the investment, to basically adopt the best practice techniques. That's going to drive our productivity as opposed to some government policy. Then we can facilitate that, but ultimately it's up to business.
I would agree with that. There can be times in Canada where we see a challenge in some markets. Think about labor shortages being the issue as we were coming out of the pandemic in 2021, 2022, many businesses were asking for government support to find workers, to bring in more temporary foreign workers. That helped solve the problem in the short term, but it also alleviated the pressure on businesses to try and innovate around the challenge of not having a readily available workforce. There's a balance to be struck there for sure, but I think ultimately the solutions have to come out of the business sector. A supporting policy framework from federal and provincial governments, for sure, need to be there. But it's not for the government to be saying, let's invest here because it's a high productivity sector. We need to let the market compete and sort that out for itself. That's what it's there for.
Well, I want to thank both of you, Tony and Andrew, for shedding light on a concept that seems easy to understand, but also when you dig into it, quite difficult to wrap your head around. Thank you both for taking the time to share your insights and for your prescriptions or your ideas around how we move forward out of this declining, long-standing issue that we've had as a country. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike. It's my pleasure. Thanks, Andrew.
Economics Matters is a Conference Board of Canada podcast. You can check out more economic outlooks and analysis at conferenceboard.ca. If you like what you hear, leave us a comment or rating on Apple Podcasts. Let us know how we're doing.